Hi, everyone. This is Mark Malatesta with TheBestsellingAuthor.com and Literary Agent Undercover, helping authors of all genres, fiction, nonfiction, and children's books to write, publish, and promote their work. This interview will be approximately 60 minutes, and for those of you who don't know me, I'm the writer who went undercover and became a literary agent to find out how to get my own books published. An agent is someone who gets author's book deals with traditional publishers like Random House. After running a literary agency for approximately 5 years, I then served as the marketing and licensing manager of Blue Mountain Arts. That's the book and gift publisher that invented e-greetings and later sold their e-card division for close to $1 billion. Today, I'm an author coach and consultant who's helped hundreds of authors get offers from literary agents and or traditional publishers. And I love promoting my authors. That's because they're extremely talented and they make me look good. My writers have gotten six-figure book deals and advances with major publishers such as Penguin Books, Simon & Schuster, and Thomas Nelson. They've been on the New York Times bestseller list, had their work picked up for TV, stage, and feature film with companies like Paramount Pictures, DreamWorks, Lionsgate, and HBO Max. They've won countless awards, and they've had their work licensed in more than 40 countries, resulting in millions of books sold. Who knows, you might be next. If you believe your book has bestseller or commercial potential, visit our website at TheBestsellingAuthor.com, primarily designed for authors who want to get a traditional publisher such as Random House. We offer a wide range of products and services such as audio interviews like this, online articles, one of the most popular agent directories, and one-on-one coaching. Again, learn more at TheBestsellingAuthor.com. Now, let me introduce today's special guest. Damone Bester is the author of the award-winning young adult novel, Mendel. It's been called a fantastic read, an absolute must-read, and a profoundly impactful work of art by reviewers and critics. Imagine the mid-1980s, last day of school, summer break. A teen rushes to meet his mother, who's being released from hospital after cancer surgery. When the teen arrives, he finds out his mother is dead, but his ex-gang-banging dad, who's been in jail the last 7 years, is at the hospital ready to take him home. Mendel is a coming-of-age story about a senior at Chicago's legendary Mendel High who must learn how to forgive as he navigates life without his mother. Things come to a head when he accidentally finds his mom's diary. In the journal, he discovers his mother's dreams of becoming a collegiate track star were derailed due to getting pregnant with him. To honor his mother, he joins Mendel's track team and excels, but before he can cash in on any scholarship offers, his father's thuggish past catches up with them when a gun-toting nemesis comes seeking revenge. The teen must decide between saving his own life or sacrificing it all to save his estranged father. Damone is an author, poet, aspiring screenwriter, and voiceover artist. He has a degree in psychology from Illinois State University and currently lives in the Twin Cities area. Damone and I worked together to improve his manuscript and pitch materials, which led to him getting offers from multiple publishers and signing a three-book deal with The Story Plant, a traditional publisher dedicated to quality fiction, founded by long-term industry professionals Lou Aronica and Peter Miller. To learn more about Damone, visit DamoneBester.com, and I'm going to spell that for you. That's DamoneBester. Again, that's DamoneBester.com. So welcome, Damone.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, my brother.
Very, very. Well, it's always good to talk to you, but not much better than this when we're able to kind of celebrate you being at this point and doing all the hustle now to promote your book.
Yes, sir. I'm excited. It's been a wild ride, but it's been a fun one too. So
right. So let's get into it. As you know, listening here, I just told everybody a little bit, at least, what your book's about. But great place to start would be for you to just take a few more minutes and tell everyone a little bit more about it, since I know a lot of people listening are going to want to get a copy.
Okay, cool. So the first little thing here. So it's pronounced Mendel. So it's like a short E at the end.
Gotcha.
So, A lot of people do say Mendel, but, you know, us from the Chicago area, we pronounce it Mendel. So Mendel was actually the high school that I attended. I grew up in Chicago on the South Side, and Mendel was a private school smack dab in the South Side, in the middle of the city. So, you know, it's not a memoir. A lot of people think it's a memoir because it's a true school and I went there, but it's totally fiction. There are some true things in there, like the track team. I ran track for Mendel, and, you know, that's the kind of the action storyline of the book. And but the main themes of the book, which I think people resonate the most with, are, you know, forgiveness, sacrifice, family, teamwork. So those are the basic concepts of the book that I wrote it around. So.
And it's also interesting, you slip a little bit. There's a little bit of a faith element in there, too. And I was just curious, as an aside, did a publisher, did anybody give you any pushback on that?
No, and that was kind of surprising, and that was the way that I kind of wrote it, you know, with the faith-based element in there. You know, I didn't want anything to be heavy-handed or anything like that, and
right.
The publisher, he definitely, you know, and it's not a Christian publisher, so they were definitely fine with the storyline. They didn't want anything to change because, you know, they said that it flowed, you know, just with the story of the book, so, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it felt, and yeah, for mainstream versus Christian writers who are kind of often trying to figure out how to navigate this, like, you handled it in the most mainstream way, where A, it comes later in the book, really, and B, it's not heavy-handed, and it just feels like a natural part of kind of, you know, some of the character's story, no different than, you know, Chicago is part of the story.
Yeah, and I definitely did that intentionally. I mean, I just wanted to tell the story of the main character, and this became a part of his life, and he just continued to live his life throughout the story. So, yeah, it worked out pretty well.
Right. And I know it's so hilarious for people listening. You emailed me, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that fantastic Audible or audiobook review you got, I think, the first one. And I emailed you right back saying, hey, I'm working out right now listening to the audio. This is great timing. But I want everybody to know that that silky smooth voice, they use different words in their review of you. But I want everybody to know that you're the one that did the narration, the audio version of the book, which is really unusual.
Yeah. You know, that's what they say. I mean, it was definitely the one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. But, you know, I've had some voiceover acting training, and, you know, I definitely want to make this a little special treat, wherein that the author is the one that reads the book, and the publisher was all for it. I just sent him my voiceover demo reel, and you know, because they were going to actually hire out actors to perform the book, you know. So he liked that saved them some money. He didn't have to pay several actors.
I was going to ask you if they paid you instead.
Yeah, so but I'm pretty sure that helped his pocket a lot.
Right.
A lot more than me do it. So.
Right.
Yeah, it was fine, but it was a lot of hard work.
Right. Yeah, no, you just do a great job, like the reviewer said, like you know, there, it's such a character driven book, and I mean, there's a plot too, right? It's both plot and character driven, but there's a lot of character development, coming of age story like this, and like you really capture a lot of the feeling that, you know, we feel like we're there and it's real.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That the reviewer, yeah, she gave me a 5-star on that, and you know, she said that she didn't really know what to expect, you know, having the author read it. So
yeah, it's like uh-oh at first, you know, and then it's like, oh wait, this is good.
Yeah, and then, you know, the extra thing, I do have to, you know, give a shameless plug here. I did the book with my brother, and he used to be a producer back in the day. And, you know, so he just set up a little home studio. And so he's the one that did all of the background sound.
Oh, yeah, because you have some, like, music and effects and stuff in there at times. That's great.
Yeah, and even the beatbox battle, that was fun. I did that with my cousin.
Right. Yeah, and I even recognize, like, the, because, you know, this is set in the 80s, like, the Galaga game effects sounds. Like, so.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know what that is. All right, so, okay, so let's go back a little bit and celebrate. I always start there, and then we go backwards and talk about how you got there. But let me just get you to relive the kind of the time when you got the happy news that you had this offer, and then, oh, it's a multiple book deal, and kind of however you want to do that, like the weeks leading up to that, months, whatever, or the day of, just how that unfolded, because that's what everybody listening is kind of aspiring to. Like they want to visualize their moment in the sun that way. And, you know,
yeah.
So relive that, and then we'll go back and talk about how you got there.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe I'll go back that month. Of course, you know, you're querying and, you know, getting the information out there. So, actually ended up being three publishers, around the same time. And, you know, you do kind of know some of the story because I was freaking
right.
out a little bit and I was emailing back and forth with you. So there were three publishers, and the first, publisher, they read it and they were reading it. They loved it. And they sent the contract, but I hadn't heard from the other two publishers yet, you know, so,
right.
You know, back and forth with you, what should I do type of deal. You know, and just keeping the communication open, I let those other two publishers know that, hey, you know, someone's interested, and they sent me a contract, and, you know, are you guys still interested? And, you know, so that upped the ante a bit. So they both, you know, rushed through it and read. And then that's when the other publisher came back with his contract and sent it to me. And it was the three book deal one. You know, he said that he loved the story so much, and there was no sense of, you know, trying to just do one offer at a time. So he offered a three book deal, and then I went back to the original person, and she actually, to her credit, you know, she said that's a great offer, and that I shouldn't pass that up. She said that, you know, she said that she couldn't counter offer or anything like that, because, you know, she felt that my story needed to be out in the world, and she wished me well, and, you know, she told me that was a better offer. So that was definitely kudos to her. And, you know, so went over the contract and I ended up signing with the story plant. So,
did you do anything to celebrate after? Or everybody's so different with that. Some people never celebrate. Like, oh, I'll celebrate when the book comes out. And then, oh, I'll celebrate when they take my next book. But did you do anything?
Yeah, I'm kind of like that myself, but, you know, I had some friends that made me celebrate. So some friends
Good.
Took me to dinner and then I had a fishing trip too. So I love bass fishing. So I went on a fishing trip. So,
right.
Yeah. So that was my celebration.
Well, and here's to not rushing, because like, now it's rare, you know, I mean, I have a bunch of these success stories on my websites about people get multiple offers, whether it be from agents or publishers, but that's not normal. So I'm just so grateful that you kind of pumped the brakes, you know, when that first offer came in and didn't freak out or go rogue on me and jump, because like you really did. There's a big difference, you know, between some publishers versus others. And like if you'd gone too quick, you might not have gotten, you know, the multiple book deal. And also, I got to tell you this. I don't know. It's a terrible story, but it's a good teaching point. You got to be so careful when you have some interest with one and you try to play it against the others, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, how we got the others to kind of respond and speed up a little bit. Well, that can also go sideways. Like one of my clients this week, he's in the process of trying to get an agent, and this is why I have people filter things through me. So this agent asked to look at his book and just said, hey, you know, is any other agent looking at it? Just seemingly innocent question. And
mm-hmm.
so... And 9 times out of 10, I can get people through that, right? And so my clients will tell me, well, I got 3 other people reading the manuscript, so I'll just tell them that. I'm like, no, you won't. Because, he's probably not going to want to compete, so we'll tell the truth. But let's not tell them everything. Let's just focus on, like, that last one who just has to look at it and say, oh, yeah, somebody else just a few days ago also asked for it. But, you know, I really love you, and here's why I love you, and so I hope you'll still read my work. And, of course, I'll get back to you if I hear anything from this other person. Well, this agent, and this is not normal, but just so you can see how bad it is, this agent responded with a 2-word reply, good luck.
Wow.
Yeah. That's just terrible, right? Now, it's not normal. Like, that's really rare. But that just kind of is how dicey it can get.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm glad you made it through.
To that point, though, Mark, remember I said at the beginning there were three publishers, so I only talked about two. So the third one, that publisher did actually, you know, pull
out. Out.
Yep. Mm-hmm, yep. Yep. So I forgot to tell that part. Yeah. So I can attest that that does happen. So
yeah. So the mistake people make, and I only made this mistake once when I was an agent. I got a little overconfident, and cocky when I get an offer for a client. Selling their book, and I got an offer within 24 hours from a publisher. So I started calling around the other publishers like, hey, I got this offer, you know, when are you going to get back to me with an offer from you too? And for the most part, people are just like, oh, congratulations, and I haven't had a chance to look at it. So just go take that offer. And I'm like, no, that's not the reaction I'm looking for, you know. I want a bidding war, you know.
Exactly.
Anyway. All right, so here we go. Let's get into kind of the case study bit here, so everyone listening or reading this transcript can kind of learn from you. So we'll go back in time, start at the very beginning with you, long before the book deal, long before you and I met. When did you first get the idea that you might be a writer or a book author?
To be quite honest, it came very later in the game. So I'm a unique study in that, you know, so I didn't take any, you know, I had writing courses here and there. I had comp and rat and English and things like that. But it wasn't until after I graduated college and was out for a couple of years, you know, so I had my psychology degree. And but I had always noticed that in high school and in college that papers just came easy to me. I mean, I used to laugh at my you know, my fellow students, like, you know, why are you guys complaining about, you know, a 3-page paper, a 10-page paper, a 20-page paper? Like, that's easy. Like, you know, but people, I just didn't get it at the time. So what happened for me was, you know, I'm out of college. I'm a few years out. And, you know, so I decided to take this talent that I, you know, just newly found. And I took one of those continuing ed courses at like a community college. And it was a business of screenwriting course. And my script was selected by the director of the program, and he met with me and just in a nutshell just told me I definitely had talent. He asked me what school I went to. I told him, and told him I have a psych degree, and he's like, no, where'd you go to school for writing? And I'm like, I didn't. So that built up a lot of confidence in me that, you know, he told me that I have a natural knack for it, and he told me that actually my strong suit was dialogue. So so that just gave me the confidence that I needed. So that started the journey there. So,
you know, there's people laughing at you right now listening to this when you're like, oh, late in life, like, oh, a couple years out of college. Like, that's funny. Yeah, so, 'cause, I mean, some people, they won't start till they're in their, you know, 30s, 40s. There are a bunch of authors. I think the Life on Little House on the Prairie or whatever, I think she started getting published when she was like 60-something.
Right, but it's such a turn from when I first started to how it is now, though.
Right.
Like, I mean, you go to school and you get all these options for creative writing and
right.
So many different genres. And, like, that wasn't when I was in school.
Right. When I love that because, like, I mean, most people I don't know, there's misconceptions out there, but I mean, most people who are getting books published, whether they're nonfiction or writing fiction, you know, they don't have any formal training that way or an MFA degree or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what other types of writing did you do before you wrote the book other than just kind of school essays, things like that? Did you do short stories, poetry, any nonfiction?
Yeah. I mean, so I did short stories. I mean, once I found out that I had the talent to write, I was kind of like a kid in a candy shop. I wanted to write any and everything just to see how far the talent went, right?
Right.
So, like I said, I had the business of screenwriting for, you know, the screenwriting class. So I did some screenplays, did short stories, entered contests, self-published a poetry book. So I was going around just reading and testing my material and people liked it. So I ended up doing a book that I self-published. So, so that was pretty much it. I didn't dabble into novels until actually this, Mendel, came along. So, yeah.
And how did you get the idea for the novel?
So that's an interesting story. And again, I so much like to give credit where credit is due. So I was reminiscing with a old buddy of mine who went to Mendel with me, actually one of my best friends that was in his wedding. And we were just talking about the glory days of track and how we used to beat up on folks. And, we were just talking about, man, why aren't there more books or movies about track? Like, you know, every now and again, you would see something maybe with, cross country or, you know,
right.
You know, things like that. But we just didn't see anything. So we just started talking about that. And then that's when the idea just sparked, like, man, you know, our track team at Mendel was so awesome. I should write something about that, you know, so that's kind of sparked the idea of the book. But, like I said, that was just, the beginning of the train tracks, I would say. You know, I definitely wanted it to have more, depth in it than just to be revolved around track. So, you know, then that's when I, you know, thought of all the different themes that I mentioned earlier. So, yeah, but it started from that conversation.
Right. I know you said earlier that it's all fictional, but I bet a lot of it's real and you're just covering your identity. You're protecting yourself.
Yeah, there's several things that are true to life. I mean, but you know, fiction anyway kind of copies from life anyway. So there's definitely some true things up in there. So
you started that food fight.
No, not the food fight, you know. Maybe started some other stuff, but right. Not the food fight. yeah, but I, you know, so one of the cool things that's been happening, Mark, since the book has come out, so I've been a guest speaker at several book clubs, and it's been so much fun. And, you know, one of the things that people ask me about are just the specific characters where they after anyone, you know. So the one character I kind of tell people about is the Auntie Emma character, and that's a combination of my aunties growing up and my mom. You know, so all of these women were, you know, 5'2" and shorter, and just tough as nails. So
right.
So that Auntie Emma character is kind of loosely based off a combination of my mom and my two aunts.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And then what about other, like, your writer's education outside of what you're talking about, as far as like conferences, workshops, seminars, like books on craft, things like that? What have you done? What have you found the most helpful, if anything, there that other people might kind of model?
Yeah, so my motto, I mean, even to this day, and I definitely would continue it, is always learning, always getting better. You know, so I never really stop the education piece, because, you know, there's so many different avenues for people to do that stuff now with online and everything. So, but when I got started, the main things that I was doing, because like I said, I was already out of college and I wasn't going back to getting more debt.
Right.
So just continuing education courses here and there at community colleges, a lot of conferences, workshops, seminars that I just gained a wealth of knowledge from, outside of course, just, you know, buying, you know, books and just roaming the bookstores and everything. But another thing that was really instrumental too is just joining a writer's group. So I was part of a writer's guild for several years and just, you know, just soaking up the whole, industry in that way. Just meeting a lot of different people, and when they have guest authors and agents come to the workshops and things like that, you know, you get to meet these people and, develop relationships and everything. So, so even, like I said, I just kept that to this day. So even as I'm writing something, I always would have another book open or something that's, about plot or structure or, you know, character, or whatever, you know. So, I'm always in that learning mode, even while I'm writing.
I love that you're still in that place even now after your first book's out and you've got all 5-star reviews on Amazon and still learning, because it's like, I mean, you can imagine this, but I have people who come into coaching and they just think they have it all figured out and they haven't even gotten an agent asking you to look at their stuff yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I love that humility and like desire to keep learning. And, I mean, this business will do it to you. I'll definitely, you know, when we were had our call and I was talking about researching agents. I talk about nurture a state of humble paranoia. Don't get cocky. If I'm not cocky, you better not be cocky, because I've helped 300 plus people get agents, right? Like, we keep one foot in the big dream world thinking and the other one and just, oh boy, you know, there's always more to learn and anything can happen, right?
Right, definitely. I mean, I just try to keep that mindset of, I'm keeping my chin to the grindstone and focusing on the craft, that'll end up speaking for itself. You know?
Yep.
So.
Exactly. Now, you can go anywhere with this, and everybody's different as far as how they get from A to Z writing a book. And yes, it can be wildly different depending on the type of book it is. But what is, from you, some of your best advice, whether it's from your head or your heart or both, for authors on how to write a book? And you can give some general advice and or some specific advice to people writing YA or fiction versus nonfiction. Just any of that might be helpful.
Okay. Yeah, so that is kind of all over the place.
Right.
So,
I don't want to box you in. So.
That's right. Don't box me in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll kind of go all over the place with that answer. So, so I guess this can be for any type of genre and even, you know, maybe fiction and nonfiction. You know, for me, with fiction, you know, I start off, you kind of mentioned earlier, about the character driven story. So I determine whether I'm going to write a, character driven story or a plot driven story. So that's one of the first things that I try to determine. Then I'm one of those people that you know, I'm kind of old school. So I jot everything down. You know, I'm the person that, you know, give me a post-it note, put it in my phone, wherever I'm going to take a note. That's what I do. So I compile a bunch of different notes, just on just different ideas about the story and what I want to do. You know, I might not even have a direction of where I want to go yet, but just getting those ideas down or writing a scene down or writing a dialogue down or something like that. So, then after that, I'm usually trying to determine the beginning and endings. For me, I typically like to start with my ending because I want to know where I'm going. The beginning can morph and change, you know, as I'm writing the story. But if I know that ending and what I want the end message to be, you know, so then I have my direction where I'm going. So then.
Right.
From that point, then comes the fun stuff, right? The research. So my research looks like, you know, online, going to you know, bookstores, getting books and interviews. My main source of my research comes from interviews because I want to talk to the people that do it, you know. So if there's occupations that I need to, you know, and it's so funny, you find so many willing people. They know you're writing a book and like, oh, okay, yeah, well, I'll go to lunch with you.
So, right.
Well, that's always fun. So, so doing that research, and then I'm a big outline guy. So once I have all that stuff, then I do the outline for my story, and then, you know, last but not least, what I'll say is that, you know, I just feel with myself, I have to be honest. And what I mean by that is, I'm not afraid to hit that delete button. I'm not afraid to, wipe out a whole chapter if it doesn't work. You know, I'm brutally honest with myself, and I would tell myself, this sucks. Do it again, you know.
Right.
So I'm not afraid to, you know, get rid of chapters of stuff if it's not working. If I see it's not working, I just have to be that brutal, because if I'm seeing it's not working and I'm trying to still, you know, drag it out, I mean, other people will see that. So I'm willing to start over from scratch if I need to. So just being honest would be that last point.
Right. Have you heard the phrase "killing your darlings"?
Yes, I have. Yes,
yeah.
I kill them off.
Yeah.
But hey, we have a story about that, don't we? I tried to kill one, and you talked me out of it, and it worked pretty well for me.
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to bring that up later. I'm definitely, that's in the back of my mind, so it's coming.
Okay, don't forget.
So you went and interviewed a real Miss Morales and, like, Gangbangers and Thugs for this, Mr. Interview?
Not the Miss Morales. I kind of had her in my head, but yeah,
right.
I did interview some unsavory characters from
right.
out of Chicago who may or may not have gangbanged. You know, I reserve the right to.
Right. Yeah. Let's just say I learned some things reading your book. So.
Yeah, and so, and even again, like, you know, you think some big tough guys are going to want to sit down with some writer, but you writing a book? What about? Yeah, we could talk.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Yes, sir.
Everybody likes to share their knowledge, right?
Oh yeah. So it was fascinating. I mean, a lot of that stuff, even though I grew up in the inner city on the south side of Chicago, that I didn't know. You know, it's funny, just really quick. So the whole recruiting thing, I mean, when he was just telling me about that, he's like, you know, hey, we recruit like the Army. Do we want good people? We don't want people that are going to be a liability to the set, you know, and set's
right.
another name for gang. But, you know, so interesting, you know, talking and getting the research done for that.
Right. Yeah, I don't think people think that stuff is nearly as thoughtful or organized, but like you say in the book, it's like running a business, here to make money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, all right, let's talk about publishing a book now. As you know, basically comes down to trying to get a traditional publisher or self-publish, which is super easy these days. But when and why did you decide to kind of go traditional versus just throw it up on Amazon or pay a Vanity Press or something like that? And what's your best advice for authors who'll be making that decision at some point?
Yeah, for me, it was just real simple between two things. Either go at it alone or go at it with a team. So I had, I mentioned earlier, I had self-published before, you know, a little book of poetry or whatever, but, you know, I worked so hard just alone trying to promote and everything because you're just literally by yourself. You know, you're doing the editing by yourself. You're you know, rewritings and marketing and spending your own money and it's, you know, I told myself I would never do a self-published or a Vanity Press again after that experience. So you know, so even though you know, I knew that I wasn't going to go that route. So that was a motivator for me to keep going to try to get that traditional publisher, because I knew how hard it was doing it all by myself. So with the traditional publisher, and I'm still learning as well, but it's so much better with a team. Just to give you an example, you know, so as authors, we comb through our stuff and we do, you know, writing is rewriting, right? That's another famous saying. So I don't even know how many times I rewrote Mendel on my own. But once I got with a team, it was a comfort to know there were like five other people, not five other rewrites or whatever, but five different people that read it. In addition to my own, you know, fanatic, you know, obsessive rewrites. So five different people proofread it. So we had the proofreader, the copy editor, the publisher, the assistant publisher. And that just gave me so much of a peace of mind to put a product out that I know isn't going to be any flaws. You know, I mean, everyone's human and, you know, we make mistakes or whatever. But when you have that many checkpoints and it's not yourself, I mean, so that's just one example, just
right.
One small example of having a traditional publisher and having a team as opposed to trying to self-publish it and hurry up and get it out because you're tired of waiting type of deal.
Yeah, and a quality team, right? Because, like, you get the illusion of a team if you're, like, hiring, let's say, a Vanity Press and you're going to be assigned an editor. But, like, those people, they're just like, okay, let me just check off the boxes. Whereas, you know, because they just got paid, you know, whereas with the traditional publisher, like, if that book doesn't sell, you know, that's not good for them anymore, and it's no good for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the thing is, too, you know, they're putting up their money, too. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
They want you to have the best product possible, you know, because they're investing in yourself. So,
right.
So then it's more of a win-win because, like, okay, I can have these people investing in me, so now I got to step up my game and make sure things are tight on my end, you know, so.
Right. Now, the good news is for this next question, what I'm going to ask you to get into kind of your best advice for authors about how to market a book. In some ways, you'll have more to say because, like, the book's out and you've been promoting it for a little while as opposed to it's, like, coming out in 6 weeks or something. So what tips do you have or things to think about that are important to authors from your perspective based on your experience about how to best kind of promote a book. Let's say while you're writing the book, is there anything people should be thinking about and doing from a promotion standpoint? You know, right before the book comes out, when it comes out, after it comes out, like just anything on that spectrum.
Yeah, you know, first thing that just pops into mind is that you definitely have to treat it like a business, you know, and that's just to say that you have to be willing to work. I mean, you know, nothing's ever going to come easy, so you have to be dedicated and committed to doing it, and you know, so again, that goes down to that research, you know, I just like. Nowadays, it's, you know, a lot of podcasts or blogs or reviewers or, you know, so many different avenues out there to help promote your book. But you just have to sit down, take the time and reach out, you know, and make yourself known. You know, I'm definitely not a person that loves to do that. But, you know, it's one of those necessary evils if you want to be successful, you know. So, again, that having that mentor, too, to help you understand the things that you, you know, don't even know to ask. So those would be the main things I would say, just the research of it, you know, a lot of stuff online, getting mentors, you know, all of that stuff that still comes into play even while you're, you know, publishing your book or even after it's published, you know. So still just have a mindset of wanting the best product out there. And now that it's completed, you want people to know about that good project, right? So you still got to do work to make that happen.
Right, and you want to ensure the next book and the next book are coming out, so you kind of have one little breath between being happy the book's out there and driving it to just share it with readers' excitement, and then it's like, uh-oh, I got to keep going to the next book, you know?
Yeah, and that's another point, too, you know, just having that team, that traditional publishing team, you know, you just have people that's been there and done that, you know, so they can kind of calm you down and just talk you through things that you may not understand, and just having that backup is always good, too, I feel.
Right. So let's check off some boxes here, like, because there are a bunch of options here, no right or wrong, but when it comes to author website, social media, the book clubs you were talking about, getting blurbs, like just talk a little bit about any of those things or anything else I'm missing there that you've done.
Let's see. Well, since my book is a YA book, a young adult, one of the things that I've done personally has just been reaching out to just different schools, you know, part of that target audience.
Right.
You know, so it's YA, so ages 12 to adult. So reaching out to schools. And so I've been having some success with that. And even like youth counselors, therapists and things like that. One cool story that, a person that bought the book and had their grandchild read it, and the grandchild, gave it to the therapist, because one of the things he was struggling with, the therapist was getting the book that this kid connected with. And, you know, one of the cool things that came from that is that, you know, like I said, one of the main themes of the book is forgiveness. And, you know, he was having some issues with his parents, and he came and told his grandma, he said that, you know, if this main character can forgive, you know, after all the stuff that he went through, you know, why am I making myself sick and not, you know, forgiving my parents for, you know, getting a divorce? And man, when that story came back and that just fell on me like an anvil, you know,
right.
So it was just one of those things of, you know, getting that stretch out there of getting it in, you know, the target audience's hands, and now they're passing it to therapists who are probably going to be passing it along to other kids that they work with. So
nice. And that's really what it's about. Yeah, I get goosebumps when you tell that story.
Yeah.
The stuff really making a difference.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't make it too hard. I mean, we're authors, right? We're creative. So be creative in the way that you're trying to get your book out there and promote it. You know, just
right.
Use that gift that you already have.
Right. And I know it can happen sometimes. I mean, this is the illusion and what everybody wants. It's like winning that $2 billion Powerball lottery or whatever, where you kind of, that first book, just kind of the magic happens where it just ends up on the bestseller list and you don't have to do a stinking thing except just write your books and enjoy the ride, you know, but that's not usually how it goes. That's like the 0.0001%, you know?
Right, right.
So, got to make peace with that. And curious thing here, what about your publisher? I'm just curious, because every publisher is different. I mean, did they come in at you hard in the beginning, once you signed with them, or beforehand, or when the book was coming about, oh, we want you to do this, and like a lot of expectations or requirements were with promo, or not so much?
No, they weren't heavy-handed with that at all. I've been blessed to just really have a good publisher. I think we have a, you know, pretty nice relationship and everything. You know, they just told me the things that they were doing. And like I said, again, when you see someone working on your behalf and they believe in you and they're putting money behind you. So like, just give you an example, some of the things they were doing. They set up, you know, blog tours for me.
Nice.
Had interviews set up for me and different things like that. So I'm like, man, if they're going to do that. And, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to let them outgrind me, you know. So
that's good.
If they're working to promote me, I got to outwork them promoting me, you know, type of deal. So, in that sense, I think it feels more like a real partnership in that
good. They
see that I'm working and I see that they're working, you know, so so no one feels slighted. No one feels that, you know, no one's not pulling up their weight and
right. Things
like that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's how it should be. I mean, that's the way you described it. I mean, whether it's the publisher-author relationship, the agent-author relationship, like, I always look at those things as a partnership where, you know, it's not like, oh, the agent's not lucky to have the author's not lucky to have the agent. Like, they're both lucky to have each other, and they're both fully committed. And same thing with the author and publisher. It's not just, I made it now. I got the publisher. They're going to do all that stuff. I don't have to do any of it. Let me just coast, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
It feeds each other. Like you do a lot, and then kind of they're going to feel like they need to do more, right? That's good energy.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, they appreciate it too, you know,
right.
Because, you know, when they're paying for, you know, second printings and all this type of stuff, it looks good that, you know, you had mentioned earlier about the book and getting the reviews and stuff. So I'm the one that's reaching out to reviewers and professional reviewers and trying to get those things out there. And, you know, I'm the one that entered the book award contest where, you know, I placed and ended up, you know, now having an award-winning book, you know. So as soon as I make these little milestones, I'm sending it straight to the publisher.
Right.
See, look what I'm doing. See here?
Yep.
And they're throwing it on the website and putting it on their social media platforms.
And on
like,
the book cover.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, yeah.
Nice. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the stuff we did together, so people can get a sense of that. And I mean, every author, every book is so different, but you know, anybody listening or reading this, they'll get something out of this. But what motivated you to work with me in the first place? Because it's been a while. Usually, this process, you know, like your book's been out for a while, so it's not like we just started, you know, this 2 months ago. It's been a long time, but so I don't remember that. But what drove you to kind of hop on the internet or wherever you found me to kind of start? Were you frustrated and you'd been failing, or you were just smart enough to like not want to fail and get help before you started?
No, I mean, you have those growing pains and you learn, right? Well, I'm keep preaching mentors and getting help is because, you know, I was one of those people like, I'll figure it out on my own. I can do it on my own.
How hard can this be?
Like, I'm a smart guy. I can figure this out. Yeah. So I found you just, you know, doing that research, looking online. And that's how I came across your site. And I just... It just made me laugh. I just thought the story was so funny. I'm like, okay, this guy, he really went all in to, you know, be undercover and figure out how to get his own books published. And I'm like, I just love that. So that was how I found out about you. But it was to the point where I was just tired of not being able to break that, you know, imaginary glass ceiling. just tired of going at it alone. And I was just at my wit's end. Like, you know, I've tried everything that I know to do. And, you know, I'm a pretty creative person. So I've reached my limit. I couldn't think of anything else to do. So I'm like, you know what? I need some help. I need to talk to somebody, get a mentor, get a coach, get something going. So, you know, I couldn't get anybody to read my manuscript. I mean, I'm sending out queries and I'm doing all this hard work. And I'm like, man, it's, you know, I need help, you know. So just that reaching that breaking point, that humbling point of saying I do need help. So.
Right. Okay. And let's get a little bit into, like, exactly what we did. And you can go anywhere with this, too. You know, I like these open-ended questions. But I don't know that you'll remember what we would have talked about or what your experience would have been like on that very first call, the introductory coaching call. Because that's all. That's like ancient history at that point. At this point, but if you remember that, anything about that, and then the other things we did that were maybe the most valuable lessons you learned that could be helpful for someone else to understand, or to help people understand what coaching can be like, whether they're working with me or someone else, doesn't matter. Like, but just that process.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember actually some things from that interview, because you know, because I'm checking you out.
Right, right.
I'm, you know,
you don't know this, but we're checking each other out. Checking you out too. But I totally understand. It's definitely the other way around. You're paying, so I got you.
I didn't know that. So yeah, so I'm like, okay. You know, who is this guy? Can I trust this guy? You know,
right.
Let me listen to what he has to say. And, you know, and just listening up to some of the things that I felt that, you know, I needed somebody to help me bridge the gap, you know. So, you know, to you know, talk a bit about that process, like, you just really helped me hone in on what worked and what didn't work. You know, you were able to show me what mistakes I was making, and we were able to correct those mistakes. You know, one of the main things, you know, like I said, I couldn't get past people reading that query and synopsis. So, we, you know, revamped that and did work on that. And you know, some of the marketing gems going towards the end too, you kind of educated me on, just, the different genres and how to, approach different things, how to bring in the target audience, how to talk about all these things in the marketing approach of it, so that, you know, an agent or publisher will see that, like, hey, you know, this guy's done some research and he can pull his own weight. He's willing to work and do some things. So, so just being able to put that type of stuff and put more substance into what I had already had, you know what I mean? So it was like, you know, you know, giving you the work and then seeing how you can polish it or even make it better, you know, and working together as a team to do that, you know, so.
Yeah, that's the good news. Bad news is, like, I'm not a ghostwriter. I can't just make magic out of nothing. It's like, I got to have the people like you who are coachable and willing to do the work and got the talent. And then, like you said, I can help you make it better, right? But we can't make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
For sure.
And that was one of the things, too, that you know, I you know, admired, you know, was that you were willing to work, too. You were willing to not just tell me what to do and things like that, but, you know, it was a good match in that sense. So, you know, you know the industry better than I do, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it was just wise to, you know, to listen and learn and understand the shortcomings that I had, so.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll be honest here, like, whenever I do anything for somebody in coaching, it's because it's the only way it'll work. I don't want to. It's just the only way. Like, in the old days, like I used to now on an introductory coaching call, so people don't get confused, like, that's just a one-hour conversation. I share as much as I can, like, hey, here's what you can do to improve your position. I give as many concrete strategies and tips as I can, but then there's some abstract things, like, hey, a query letter, you know, you need to have this third part in the query letter, and you need to kind of talk about these kind of things roughly, but I can't give somebody the word-for-word language for that on a call like that. But In the later coaching, right, that's when I can actually do something. And query letter is one of the things, few things I do that's hands-on. Again, just out of necessity, because in the old days when I started doing this a long time ago, 2011, I would just kind of try to tell authors how to write their query, and then they'd write it, and then I'd tell them how to make it better, and then I'd tell them how to make it better, and I'd just keep coaching them, and then one day the light bulb went off. I'm like, this is stupid. Let me just write the thing.
Yeah.
It's faster and easier. I can do it in less time, right? But most things I can't do that. Like synopsis, I don't do that. I can kind of give you samples, try to get you there, and then I can edit it and can do that. But I would never be able to write a synopsis for somebody. That's not my skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Or like with the manuscript, we did some stuff with the manuscript. Didn't we resurrect one of your characters? Didn't you like try to kill your protagonist initially?
Yeah, so you're trying to make fun of me. Yeah.
It's not, my wife says it's not making fun or being rude if it's true. Right?
I need to have a word with your wife. So yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I did want to kill off my protagonist because I just thought that would be so heart-wrenching at the end and people would just love it.
It'd be so dramatic and you'd win a literary prize, which might be true. But
right, yeah. So, but, you know, kudos to Mark for dropping that little seed in my head, which obviously worked better because you can't have a trilogy is dead.
Right.
So the main character lives at the end, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I think now, and I may be wrong or kind of not getting this totally right, but I think what wasn't your Didn't your first book initially end? It was like too much, kind of like a cliffhanger also?
Yeah, that was one of the things that we fixed. I think in the synopsis too.
Right.
I was, again, that was one of those things that I really didn't know, that the agents, the publishers, they do want to know how it ends. You know, you just can't leave them like, don't you want to read the book?
Right.
Like, no, I have 100 books to read, so I'll pass.
Well, they want to read it, but they don't want to roll the dice. Like, I want to know exactly how this thing ends before I spend my weekend on it. You know?
Exactly. Yep. So that was one of those things. Another thing that just popped into mind, too, was that, like I said, when you know, you by yourself, you only have a certain limited amount of knowledge. So, I mean, when I got with you and when we started, you know, when we agreed to work with each other and everything, just the knowledge base of how many more publishers and agents and managers were out there. And I'm
right.
Like, you know, I thought I had exhausted that thing. I mean, I'm doing all my research. I had all my writers markets and everything.
Right.
Like, Mark, I've queried everybody. Like, no, you haven't. I'm like, what are you talking about? Yes, I have. And I was wrong.
Yeah. But again, out of necessity, like, I've definitely got the most comprehensive, like, database of stuff like that because, like, that's sometimes the only reason an author makes it. Or not the only reason, but the deciding factor, right? Because you can have the best query synopsis book in the world, but, you know, if you're missing maybe that extra group of agents that might have been interested, that could be the end. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so let's see. So you've talked about mentoring a lot, right? You think in those terms. So whether it's mentoring, coaching, just, you know, getting support, investing in yourself and your writing that way. I mean, you know, how do you think about that? How do you think other people should think about that? And again, it's not about me. It's about, you know, just people getting help. I don't care who it is. Once in a while, you know, like if somebody finds me and they don't resonate with me, it's like I'll encourage them, we'll go work with someone else. Like, you know, that's great, but get help, you know?
Yeah. I think what I've learned that's so important. You know, you're the one that kind of, you know, was the start for all of that because I didn't have mentors before, even though I had met several people and, like I said, a lot of conferences and everything that I went to. But I didn't cultivate and develop those relationships, which, you know, was definitely a mistake in my past that I didn't do. So So when I started working with you and I saw how valuable that was on the book end, so now, I mean, I have a mentor for, you know, television teleplays that I write. I have a mentor for screenplays that I write. So I have three mentors, you
nice.
Know, one for each thing that I'm doing, because you know, you just got to have that knowledge base of the person who's been there and knows the most about it. And you know, and surprisingly, I mean, it definitely takes a lot of hard work and digging to find people that are willing to do that, to give up their time, because they're trying to produce as well, right? I mean, they're
right.
trying to write books, they're trying to, you know, produce products that the material they want to get out there. You know, so it is a thing that you should cherish if you are able to get one, and definitely respect their time and you know, allow them to do their own work too. But you know, you got to have somebody that's in the industry that you're trying to get into. I mean, that's just my own, you know, personal opinion. So
right. Yeah, and I've got a couple. I mean, I got on simple level, like I've got a personal trainer I've been working with for a long time. See him every Saturday. One of my favorite parts of my week, you know, kind of helps me kind of seeing and growing and kind of hitting goals and have that camaraderie. And then I've got a woman I work with, a German lady who lives in the United States, and she makes fun of herself. She's like the tough German. She like gives it to me good, tells me what I need to do to get my web traffic. That makes everything work. But
okay.
But the game changer, like if I didn't start working with her, I don't tell you how many tens of thousands of dollars invested that over the years. It's worth it. Like that total game changer for my business. You know, like
mm-hmm.
if people can't find you, who cares how good you are? It sounds a lot like an author, right? Trying to get
right.
that work out. If you can't
exactly.
open that door, you know, you're stuck.
Oh yeah, exactly.
So all right, so talk a little more. You were looking at me kind of side-eyed earlier in the call, talking about how before that first call coming into it, you're looking at me a little sideways, like, oh, who is this guy? And can I trust him and all that? And I now, in the old days, that would have bugged me if someone said that. Now I get it. I mean, I know what the world's like. So
mm-hmm.
now I actually get authors like you talking about it. Like when you came into that first call, or even before, maybe sometimes people are fine going into the first call. They're like, oh, no big deal there. It's not that expensive for them. Some people it is. Save 6 months for that one call. But either way, whatever skepticism or thoughts you had, maybe kind of could even be with your past if you've been burned by somebody else. Like what maybe thoughts, feelings where you have skepticism prior to that first call, or maybe taking the leap and doing the bigger program? And like what got you over that hump if you had any of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what really got me over that hump is the experience of knowing I've only gone as far as I could.
Right.
Okay, if I don't get the help, where am I going to go? I'm going to continue to stay where I am. So you got to be willing to take a risk. I mean,
that's a motivator.
I mean, you have to be willing to invest in yourself. I mean,
right.
You're never going to go anywhere if you don't. I mean, of course, you know, a lot of people, and I mean, I'm one of them as well, have tried things, tried programs or whatever, and you get burned, you live and learn, but,
right.
You know, you have to go for it, or you're just going to continue to stay stagnant where you are. So specifically with you, you know, that was definitely the first thing, you know, can I trust this guy? You know, so I'm researching your website. I'm reading the testimonials, which helped, you know, because with the testimonials, what I look for personally is not for everything to be the same. I'm looking for differences. I'm looking
right.
for specific things that you helped individuals with, you know, because if I see a group and everyone saying, well, Mark helped me with A and B and C, A and B and C, A and B and C, I'm like,
right.
I don't know if I could trust that. That
right.
sounds rehearsed. That sounds like somebody, you know, that Mark paid him to say this, you know. So I'm looking for the individuality of the testimonial. So, you know, and to be quite honest and be open about that, I mean, my background helps me with that. I mean, I've been in social services for over 24 years, working with mental health and chemical dependency. So a large part of my job for several years, over 10 years, was interviewing people that were highly had a lot of mental health and chemical dependency issues. So I'm able to I'm able to read people a little, probably a little bit.
Right.
I just have more experience in doing that.
Right.
So, so after I, you know, researched the website, looked through the testimonials, now I'm talking to you. So the things that sold me and made me want to give it a try was that you didn't sell me. The thing that sold me is that you didn't sell me. There wasn't ever at all any one of those hard sales, you know, the ABCs, always be closing, like, you know.
Right.
After every sentence, like, you know, could I send you the contract? Can I send you the contract? So that it helped that it was just a genuine conversation, and I felt in my heart like, okay, this is a guy that just truly wants to help people, and it's fair that he would want a fee for that. You know, it's a service that he's giving. He's coaching people. So
right.
Obviously, you know, you work, you do a job, you get paid. That's life. So, after our first conversation, you know, it was just a thing of, you know, you had to read my material, and then that was your vetting process, right? You had to see, okay, is this guy, does he have some stuff that's good enough to work with, you know? So once we got past that, I was, I was pretty easy to trust you after that, so.
Right. And I didn't tell you you're a good-looking man, looks like Dwayne Wade, until after we were already working together.
Yeah, that was after we were together. The compliments came afterwards, yeah.
All right. You have any other kind of random thoughts, tips, advice for any author wanting to get to the promised land like you?
Oh, man, we're coming to the end, huh? That went by pretty quick. I've said it several times, but I'm just going to beat that drum again. Getting a mentor, the advice I would try to give somebody, you know, stop trying to do it on your own. I've referred 4 people to you. I don't know if they reached out to you or not. I just didn't follow up. You know, I could just give the information. You can't, you know, you can lead a horse to the well, but you can't make them drink, what type of deal, you know. Stop doing it on your own. Get mentors, and find the right mentor for you. You know, you just because you've had a bad experience, like I said, I've been burned with different programs or whatever I've tried throughout my life, but that doesn't mean that you just stop doing it altogether, because people have a wealth of knowledge, and there are some people out there that want to share it and help you succeed in your own dreams and goals. And, and that's just heartfelt. That's been, you know, my experience with you, or I would have stopped working with you.
Right, right.
You know, you have options there. You can work with someone or you cannot, you know.
Right.
So there it is.
I appreciate that. And it's funny, on the referral front, I'll have sometimes somebody will email me like, hey, Mark, you know, how to refer someone to you? I'm like, please don't give my email or my phone number. Like, tell them, send them to my website, right? Because, like,
yeah.
It's the right energy, right? I'm not desperate. Like, I want the good energy. I want somebody who has a basic idea. They've been to getaliteraryagent.com or one of my websites, and they have a basic idea of what I do, who I am, see the success, see the value, understand it, and then they want it or they don't, and that's okay. But, like, I don't want to sell. Just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be sold to, and I don't want to sell either. Like, if it's right, it's great, you know? And then, like you said earlier, it's like that partnership. And I don't know, I'm that way. I think this kind of rubs off from when I was an agent. Maybe it shouldn't be like this, but I don't want to feel like hired help that's like bossed around, talked down to. I want to feel like I'm a partner with someone. I bring equal value, they bring equal value, and we're a team, right? Shoulder to shoulder, respect, right? So
definitely. You mean you didn't like when I talked them down to you like that? I'll stop doing it then.
No, that's why I was joking earlier. I was only half joking when I was saying I was checking you out too on the intro call, right? Because like I come in, because again, I can only do so much. I'm just half the deal. Like, I'm like, okay, is this person, do they have social skills, basic social skills? Are they committed? Are they coachable? And then you can imagine some of those introductory coaching calls I do, like I'll have somebody, and it's so ironic because at the end of the call, they might ask me about additional coaching. I'm like, absolutely not. And they're like, why not? And I'm like, well, every bit of advice I tried to give you in the last hour, like, you just told me you don't want to do it.
Right.
Right? Or you know this other way that's better, or this or that. And it's like, okay, it's all right. Yeah, it's all right. So you kind of sniff each other out, right?
Yeah, I get that.
But But now, hey, I would have been super salesy if we talked like the first 3 months I was doing this business. I work with anybody at that point. Not now. It's got to be good. It's got to be right. So,
you live and learn.
Yep. So, well, I swear I'm gonna pronounce your book right here when I wrap it up here. I'm gonna try, but thank you for doing this again. Congratulations, sticking it out. It's so much fun to get here and then stay in touch after. So, and we'll chat a little bit more after we go dark on this call. But thank you for preparing, coming in here with tips that you think would help people. And I know it's going to help a lot of people, so thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure. I wish everyone well and wish everyone success.
Yeah. All right, everyone. This is Mark Malatesta, founder of The Best-Selling Author with Damone Bester, author of the award-winning novel Mendel. You can order a copy at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, anywhere, everywhere. Books are sold. Mendel is available in print, ebook, audiobook, which, again, as I mentioned earlier, is read by the author. To hear an audiobook snippet and learn more, visit damonebester.com. I'll spell that one more time, D-A-M-O-N-E-B-E-S-T, like the word best, and then E-R.com, damonebester.com. And if you're interested in one-on-one coaching with me to talk about the best way to write, publish, or promote your book, go to authorconsultation.com. Again, that's authorconsultation.com. And if you're listening to this interview or reading the transcript and you're not yet a member of our online community, register now at thebestsellingauthor.com for instant access to more information and inspiration like this to help you become the best-selling author you can be. Remember, getting published isn't luck. It's a decision. See you next time.